You're listening to the Today's Wills and Probate podcast, one of the leading sources of information for the wills and probate sector. Don't forget to subscribe and sign up to our free newsletter at todayswillsandprobate.co.uk and follow us on LinkedIn and Twitter.
Hello and welcome to the latest Today's Wills and Probate podcast. Today I'm joined by Anthony Belcher. Anthony is the Director General at the Society of Will Writers, although he doesn't like to make a huge amount of noise about it because, as he says to me, it makes him feel as though he's a bit 1950s BBC. But welcome along to the podcast, Anthony. Thanks very much indeed for joining.
Yeah, thank you, David. Thank you for having us on.
We're going to talk today about the Society, which has been going for 28 years. You've recently celebrated your 28th anniversary, and touch upon some of the successes that the Society's seen over those years, and also look a little bit at what the future holds as well. So we'll dive right in. Incredible achievement to have sort of lasted 28 years. In some respects, it's a bit of an indictment on the industry, isn't it? Because this is still an unregulated industry with a membership organisation that has been going for such a long time. What have been the successes and what do you think have been the failures over the past 28 years?
I think there's really a lot of merit in what the Society has achieved over the time, really. I think you've got to look at it in the respect that if you go back right back to April 1994, it started out to five people, you know, five business owners, like-minded individuals got together and they thought, you know what, there's a real need for creating something here that is not only in the interests of the professionals, but also, you know, clients, consumers, the general public. Legal services being very sort of dominated by the likes of your solicitors and so on and so forth. It's been something which it's a little kind of niche that's really had to have been carved out over that time period. You could almost sort of suggest, and I would suggest really that I think, you know, will writing as a profession, as an industry, whatever you want to call it, wouldn't really be what it is if it weren't for the Society, to be honest. I know we're not, you know, obviously we're not the only membership organisation. There's others out there. We're all working towards, a common goal. But in terms of, you know, steering things in the direction they've gone in, actually training people to go out and do the job and do it properly and ensure that, you know, consumers are getting the appropriate advice, the correct document to match, and obviously making sure that they're actually acting in their best interests. I think it's the Society that's really been the driving force behind that. We're sitting currently on, you know, nearly 1,800 members, which for something exactly as you said, is, you know, it's a membership organization. It's entirely voluntary. There's no regulation. We can't force anybody to join. We can't force anybody to stay after they have joined. But there's near on 1,800 people now that have made that conscious decision to sign up to the framework that we've put in place. You know, our code of practice, our insurance requirements, training requirements. They haven't done that just for the sake of it. You know, it's not just so they can slap a logo on their website or, you know, claim to be any better than anybody else or be something that they're not. They've done it because they genuinely believe in what it is that we do. Sort of our whole ethos, in effect. You know, they've really got behind that, the messages that we put out there. I think really, if you had to look at what the successes are, that would be it.
I described it as a membership organization. I think in there you've described it as a membership organization. You and I have chatted separately about this, but it's as much a training organization as it is a membership organization, though.
Absolutely. You know, the Society, I like to look at it as a support network. You know, we're not a regulator. And I think that's where people start to, you know, muddle things slightly. It's what we impose is self-regulation. People join up to a voluntary scheme. It's a framework, like I say, it's the code of practice. It's a set of rules, insurance requirements, training requirements. they come on board to do that because they as individuals know and believe that that is the correct thing to do to provide these services properly. But you're absolutely right. It is only through training that you're going to be able to do that to the best of your ability. You can't go out and have some of the most personal and in-depth conversations with individuals that anybody will ever have. You know, the will writer who comes and sits down with my mum, my brother, my family, my friends, whoever it will be, potentially will have far more of a personal conversation with that person than I might. Because you have to know how to explore everything that person has. It's everything they love, it's everyone they love, it's everything they care about, everything they own, you know, and what they want to do with all of that. But you as the will writer, the estate planner, you've got to be able to pick out all of the important points from that conversation, turn that into the appropriate advice, and then convert that into the appropriate documentation for that individual. And you've got to learn how to do that properly. Anybody absolutely can set themselves up a will writer. You or I, David, could start our own will writing business tomorrow and nobody could tell us not to. Nobody could tell us how to run it. Nobody could, you know, tell us what would be right or wrong. Because exactly as you say, there's no regulation. But that doesn't mean you're going to be any good at it. That's the thing, you know, just because anybody can do it, it doesn't mean anybody can do it. That's the way I would look at it. And I think you're exactly right. I think it, you know, it is a training organization. If you took our monthly intake of new trainees for our introductory course, for example, there's 140 150 people a year alone that will sit that course with us in person here at the college. You can double that if you then include all of the people that sit the distance learning version online. Now, not all of those people go on to become will writers. Not all of those who go on to become will writers become members. But that's still 300 people over the course of a 12-month period who have woken up one morning and gone, I think I want to learn to be a will writer.
You suggested that at your current trajectory, your membership's going to increase. Mm-hmm. Is it accurate then to say that this is a growing industry, will writing? Do you see that, you know, more people are coming into it than are leaving?
Oh, definitely. Absolutely. I mean, you even just looking at our own figures internally, we've grown every year since we really started tracking it about 5 years ago. We've seen an increase every single year, even through COVID, you know, even through, a lot of people out of work, a lot of people taking, you know, lockdown or furlough or whatever as an opportunity to retrain or develop new skills. You know, as a business, as the society, we have benefited from that. But absolutely, it is definitely a growing industry. There has been obviously the increase and the, you know, sort of the rise of the online will writing companies. There's quite a few more of those who have cropped up over the last few years. But I think what that's showing really is how the sort of, you know, technology is really now starting to make a bit of an impact on our profession as well. Software is always, well, not necessarily always, but software for a very long time has aided the creation of documents for people, you know, will writing software. You know, the society's had its own will writing software for near on 20 years now, you know. And I think that because we've gone through, you know, all of the changes and the modernization of everything through the past couple of years, I think it's really accelerated where we would have been. And I think because of that, and I think because of the technological advances and the new developments and the innovation that we are seeing, I think it's making it more and more attractive to people who want to come and do it as a career as well. A lot of the newer trainees that we're getting these days are a lot younger than they once were. I think will writing is becoming less of a bolt onto an existing business or less of something for people to keep themselves busy with in retirement. I think people are really identifying it now as a long-term career. There are people coming through the college in their 20s. Our youngest member is 18 years old. You know, they're coming straight out of school, not necessarily always going on to set up their own business and do it themselves. They might be working under another member. They might be part of one of the companies who are already registered with us, for example. But people are really identifying it as something that they can do for a living now, as has always been the case, but that's happening earlier in people's lives now than it perhaps was before.
That change in demographic is interesting, isn't it? Time for a period of introspection. What have been the failures or missed opportunities, do you feel?
I'll be honest, it's difficult for me to say sort of historically. A lot of what I know before my time with the society is sort of purely anecdotal, really. I suppose if I can really talk about what I think perhaps the failures have been over the time that I have been involved, I think the thing that we've always been very bad at has been our own best kept secret. And whether that's because we just don't shout enough about what we do, or whether that's because we don't engage enough with people, I'm not really sure. Communication has always been something we've somewhat lacked on. And I don't mind coming on here and admitting that, you know, we can only improve if we are prepared to admit what our weaknesses and what our failures are. I think member involvement is certainly something which we need to improve on. I'm constituted to do right by the members of the society. You know, I have to act in their best interests. As I said, every penny I spend, every decision I make has to be for them. And I can only do that effectively if I actually involve them in that decision-making process. So I think that's something we've perhaps not been very good at historically. We are the largest of our type. We have been around for a very long time. We are doing things very well. You know, we get to engage with government and other regulators and things like that. And I don't think we'd be doing that if we'd been making a complete hash of it up to this point, I suppose.
Well, one of the key drivers behind the success, obviously, is Brian McMillan, who sadly is no longer with us. How much did the organisation have to adapt without him? Because he was a force of personality, wasn't he?
Oh, absolutely. There'd be no society were it not for Brian. One of its original five founding members, Brian's company, Willpack. You know, if it weren't for what he was doing, you know, back in the late 80s, early 90s, with the way his own career trajectory, we might not be having this conversation today, I suppose. Everybody knew Brian. And I think everybody who is involved in will writing, whether connected to the society or not, I think has in some way benefited from the work he put in, the efforts he made over his 20 plus years at the helm. Us adapting was... It was weird, the problem is because losing Brian happened at such a strange time in all of our lives anyway. You know, it was sort of middle first lockdown, and we were all very, you know, us as a business, we were quite new to the remote working aspect. That was not something we'd ever really done before, unless we'd had some sort of horrendous snowstorm, which kind of forced our hand, really. We were very much a close-knit team, you know, together in the office every day. So we were all a little bit disjointed at the time. You know, you got staff members sort of struggling and, you know, finding, you know, and the emotions running high and stuff, and you can't even just... you know, pat them on the shoulder and check they're all right. It was a weird time for us. For the business, however, it wasn't, I don't think it was too difficult. Brian sort of over the course of 2019, early 2020, sort of steadily started handing responsibilities over to me, and we started discussing the future as we saw it anyway. You know, obviously I became a director in November 2019, so a good 8 months or so before he passed away. So there's, you know, there's a lot we already kind of got our heads around. I'll be honest, we disagreed a lot, but it's just the kind of character he was, really. It was very rare Brian and I actually saw eye to eye on anything, and even over silly little things like the Meet the Team page on our website. Like, he was completely against it, but I sort of stood my ground and put it on there anyway. but that worked well for us, you know. I think because we had two very different personalities and two very different ideas of what we wanted and ways of doing things, I think we always found somewhere in the middle that we would compromise on that would work for us both. I remember one of the last sort of proper conversations we ever really had was, he said to me, he says, people don't come to the society for me anymore. And I said, well, that's not true. You know, you're not, okay, you're not over there teaching the 4-day course anymore. You know, you've maybe missed a conference or two here or there, you know. You're maybe not in everybody's face like you once were, but people do still come to the society for you because the society is what you built. People still come to the society for Brian, even though he's not been here for 2 years. I still have those days, and I probably will do for a very long time, where I just think, God, I wish I could just ask him. You know, if I get a difficult question, or if something pops up, or a scenario, or just something where I'm maybe just a little bit out of my comfort zone, or, you know, I'm not quite prepared for dealing with it or whatever, Brian would have known what to do. But that comes with many, many, many years of experience and doing it. So that's been, you know, that for me, perhaps personally, there's been quite an adjustment. For the business, we've been so well led and we've been so well trained. For the most part, we've been able to just get on with it, really.
They do say that the role of a good manager is that it all ticks along neatly when they're not about, don't they? You've obviously had a bit of time to put your stamp on the society. What are your plans? What's the society's plans for the next sort of 3 to 5 years?
Our main focus, well, obviously there's two main things that we're responsible for. You know, our two main goals as a society. One are promoting the, you know, the need for wills and estate planning to the public at large. And the, you know, the other, making sure that the people who do it for a living are doing it properly. We focused very heavily these past few years on the recruitment side of the business, you know, growing the society, you know, getting more members on board, training more people, you know, helping the companies who are registered with us expand and things like that. And we're very, very good at doing that. Like I say, you know, we're nearing on 1,800 members. I expect within the next 3 to 5 years that will have tipped over 2,000, which doesn't sound like a lot. You know, it's only another 200 more, which, you know, you might think, well, that's not many people over that course of time. But when you account for retirements and, you know, sadly, people passing away in that time as well, it grows a bit steadier. So whilst that's sort of doing its own thing, our shift is going to be much more in the on the consumer education side of it. I think there's a real disconnect between the number of people who are or want to become will writers versus the number of people who are choosing to actively engage in those services. You know, everybody has a different number for it in terms of the percentage split of those who do and don't have wills. It's around about 2/3 of the population who don't, you know, so the eligible population who don't. I've been here for 6 years now, and that number's not really moved. If it fluctuates by a percentage here or there, great. I think there was a big boost of people making wills through COVID and through the lockdowns and stuff, because as we all know, one of the biggest driving factors behind people actually making wills and taking out estate planning services is when they're faced with the notion of death, or having to, you know, deal with the death of a loved one or something like that. So what we really want to do, what our focus really needs to be going forwards now, is putting some real effort into trying to bring that number down. It can't be done just by us. It's got to be a wider industry effort. It's no good everybody trying to compete against each other to be bigger and better than everybody else. We're all here to do the same thing. Every member of the society, every member of the other organizations and the the rest of the unregulated and even regulated sectors combined, we've all got to get behind the message of just make a will. And we really want to be the driving force behind that. A lot of what we've been doing over the past sort of 6 months or so has been in more of a public awareness campaign. A lot of it's been about sort of who the society is, but more so what we're trying to do is sort of get across the point that if you're going to go and get your wills written by somebody, go and get them done by a society member, because it's what they're trained to do. for the most part, will writing is their life. Their practices aren't muddied up with other services. They don't do a divorce in the morning, bit of litigation in the afternoon, and then draft a few wills on a night time. They get up in the morning, they see clients, they take instructions, they draft wills, and that for the most of them is what they love doing. You aren't going to get a better service than a society member, I think. But at the same time, part of me and in the back of my mind is that it doesn't necessarily matter as long as you've gone out and done it anyway. So we just want to encourage, we really just want to put a lot of effort and a lot of our focus into just the consumer education side of things. We might never get it massively down, I don't know. We can only try. But we got to give it a go.
You've talked about regulation in the course of the conversation. As I said in the introduction, it's almost an indictment of the fact that there is no regulation, that you guys have been going for so long in some respects. What do you see happening in the will writing industry over the course of the next 3, 5, 10 years outside of your objectives?
I think we would be naive to think that regulation won't one day happen. I think there is a possibility that it'll be looked at again. The conversations we've had over the last couple of years, the roundtables we've sat in on, the meetings we've had, the questions we've proposed to government and things like that, none of them necessarily allude to it happening. But when you look at what's happening in sort of, the wider kind of legal sector, and including, financial services and things like that, you start to kind of, you can only help but feel a little bit sometimes like the walls are closing in around you. And it's not necessarily that it's a bad thing. I think you've hit the nail on the head there, really. I think we have been able to get to the point we've got to because, we haven't had the regulation to worry about. I think sometimes the difficulty with regulation is that it brings costs. It's the higher costs of practicing and operating as a regulated entity. I think for many people, will writing is a very affordable career path because they haven't necessarily got to worry about those sorts of things. You've got your membership with us, you've got your insurance and your software on top, and in the grand scheme of things, that's about it. For a fledgling business, that might only cost you about £1,000 for your first year in business, and that's not really that much when you think about it. If you put training and other bits on top, you might spend two or three, but comparative with even with something like a franchise, you might spend £250,000 to get yourself started. Will writing is cheap to do. Regulation could potentially change that, but again, like I say, it's not necessarily that it's something that we wouldn't embrace or that we're not, that we don't welcome it. I think what we would like to see, and I think what would be preferable, is effectively what we're already doing. And it's a form of, it's sort of making it more a form of licensing scheme. It's making sure that the people out there who are providing will writing, and it doesn't necessarily have to be just will writing, you can apply it to legal services in general. I think one of the wider concerns that, sort of the government has, and the likes of the Legal Services Board and stuff, I think it's consumers just sort of don't necessarily know where to go for the legal services that they need. Or there's this belief that just because somebody provides legal services that they are a regulated individual, when in reality there's only six reserve legal activities. You know, it's really not that, you know, like as I say, you can get up and you deal with the divorce in the morning, and you know, there's a lot you can do, profess to be a legal professional, and that's fine. There's not, like I said, there's not necessarily anything wrong with that. But what we expect will happen first is more of a centralized register of legal professionals. I think that's sort of what I think that's from the conversations we've had and from, you know, what we've been discussing, is that's potentially where we go first. More effort put into the consumer education, the consumer advice side of things, websites like Legal Choices, for example, you know, a bit more backing behind those, really just trying to help consumers make informed decisions about where they go for their legal services. In the long run, yeah, absolutely, we could be looking at regulation. But what we potentially expect is if will writing itself becomes our reserved activity, then I think the scope needs to be widened in terms of the authorized persons to carry out that activity. And that's where I think bodies like us will come into play. You know, I think the society, again, with the framework we've already got in place, with the systems we already implement, the auditing procedures, the CPD requirements, insurance requirements, training requirements, you know, all of what we do is already largely what a regulator would do anyway. So we're not a million miles away from it. I just think the system that we've got, the scheme that we have in place is a less heavy-handed way of doing it. And I would prefer... And I think, you know, as a society, and if you ask the vast majority of our members, I think what they would prefer would be for things to stay the way they are. But if we're going to look at regulation in the future, and again, I think we have to be prepared to accept that it may well one day happen. I think bringing will writers under the, you know, under the umbrella of authorised persons, I think is probably the most sensible way of doing it. It becomes a licensing scheme at that point. It doesn't matter who you're registered with necessarily, as long as you're registered with somebody. So you can have your approved bodies, and then the members under said approved bodies can continue to practice. I think that would be the most sensible way of doing it, because there's still some element of checks being imposed at that point. But what it should hopefully do, in theory, is, you know, stamp out the few rogues and the bad practice that is out there, which in fairness isn't as widespread a problem as some people would make out. There are perhaps some professions, or there are other parts of the, you know, the wider legal sector which would probably prefer to see will writers disappear overnight if they had their own way. But I think from our point of view, I think there's no widespread issues within the will writing sector. If you take our complaints figures, for example, we got near on 1800 members. Over the course of 2021, we processed 14 formal complaints. Only half of those had to be referred on to our professional standards board to be dealt with by them. You can't honestly tell me that 14 complaints out of 1800 members is that serious of a problem. You know, in an ideal world, there'd be no complaints whatsoever. But as few as 14 suggests to me that either members aren't getting complaints at all, or if they are, they're being dealt with before they're having to be brought to us anyway. And I think if you consider then sort of the complaints backlog at the, you know, the legal ombudsman, and you know, and some of the issues which are being faced higher up there as well. What a lot of people will suggest is that, you know, it's more important they get their own house in order before they look at anybody else's. Within the next 3 to 5 years, probably no real change. Beyond that, I think that's potentially when we start having a look at it. But we as the society are already involved in those conversations. You know, we're going to be part of that process. It's not like they're just going to, you know, they wouldn't just whip it out from under our feet without a moment's note, you know, without any warning. So, you know, we're quite confident that we've got a good grasp on it as it is. But all we can do is be part of the conversations. And again, exactly as I've said, you know, several times before, just make sure that we act in the best interests of our members.
an interesting take on where regulation could go. And I think you answered the point that I was going to ask you about, which is about redress. You know, licensing needs redress as well, which is an important part of the whole process.
It's one of the reasons the society was founded in the first place. You know, back in the 90s, consumers didn't really have access to redress.
We're out of time. But it's been really interesting to chat. Thanks very much indeed for your time, Anthony.
Yeah, you are more than welcome. We've really enjoyed it. Thanks for having us on. I could go for hours, really.
It's a soapbox. Soapbox that we can both get on, absolutely. The Today's Wills and Probate podcast is available on your preferred podcast provider. It's also available on the Today's Wills and Probate website. Anthony, thank you very much indeed for your time. Thank you very much indeed for listening, and we'll see you soon.
You're listening to the Today's Wills and Probate podcast, one of the leading sources of information for the wills and probate sector. Don't forget to subscribe and sign up to our free newsletter at todayswillsandprobate.co.uk and follow us on LinkedIn and Twitter.